Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
Let's shine the spotlight on this 50th International Eucharistic Congress about to take place in Dublin from the 10th to the 17th of June. I'd like to do this by bringing you a scrapbook in sound, stepping back in time.
The first Eucharistic Congress to be held in Dublin took place in June of 1932. It was to be an event so moving it would live on in the hearts and minds of Irish Catholics for generations to come. A moment described at the time in the media as a great Catholic festival with scenes of ecstatic religious fervour. On one occasion, Paramount News reported how in the festooned streets decorated with white flowers, the faithful knelt in adoration, as a solemn 4-mile procession, with the consecrated host carried high for all to see, wound its way to the sacramental pavilion at O'Connell Bridge. 80 years on, in his basic text on the forthcoming Dublin Eucharistic Congress, scheduled once again in this city in the month of June, from the 10th to the 17th, the current Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin, places this 1932 Congress into an historical context, explaining how it marked a moment of great religious accomplishment. Quote, "The event responded to the needs of piety which people felt at that moment. It responded to the need for affirmation of the Catholic community in Ireland, finding its way in the newly independent state. Today, Irish society has changed, and Irish piety has changed. People are hesitant about a sense of triumph in the public affirmation of their faith." Unquote. Archbishop Martin then highlights in this basic text how, coming after the Civil War, which radically divided the people of Ireland, this Eucharistic Congress represented the first major national event which brought together both sides, thus pointing to how, at a national level, the event represented a strong moment of reconciliation. But why don't we step back in time for a moment to 1932? In those days, popes just didn't travel. They sent a representative to attend major events such as this one. And the Pope of the time, Pius XI, did exactly that. His choice fell on a cardinal of great distinction both at home and abroad, his name Lorenzo Lauri. It was to him that the Pope entrusted this message.
"Go to Ireland in my name, and say to the good people assembled there that the Holy Father loves Ireland and its inhabitants and visitors, and imparts not the usual apostolic blessing, but a very special, all-embracing one."
Why don't we listen for a moment to a rare archive recording of the time taken from National Irish Radio, ORTE, which includes some rather crackly sound of Cardinal Lowry himself, introduced first by the reporter, who points to this historical moment.
"The first papal legate to visit Ireland for 4 centuries lands at Kingstown. Greeted on arrival by the Archbishop of Dublin and President de Valera, the papal legate, Cardinal Lorenzo Lowry, is accompanied by them on his triumphal journey to the city. No sign of a royal house ever received such a welcome as is accorded this Prince of the Church, and scenes of unparalleled religious fervour mark every mile of his journey into the city.
In your eminence, we gladly recognise the living image of the Church, which is one because of the supreme authority of the successor of St. Peter.
Do not wish to leave Ireland without giving myself the pleasure of speaking to you, to greet you in the name of the Holy Father, and to bestow on you his blessing."
And the visitors Pius the 11th referred to did come to Dublin, thousands of them from across the world, priests, nuns, and lay faithful.
Perhaps too because many of these pilgrims were of Irish stock, and the Congress coincided with the 1,500th anniversary of St. Patrick's arrival on the Emerald Isle. What's certain is that reports of the time described how for 6 days Dublin became, in a sense, the hub of the Catholic world. Down at the port, a dozen or so ocean liners had moored, and pilgrims had poured out down the gangplanks. From all the continents they came, from Europe, of course, but also from further away. The United States and Canada, Latin America, Australia, some even came from China. Many of them had come to know Ireland through the Irish missionary presence in their home country. Let's recall, too, the importance Pius XI attributed to missionary zeal. Just listen to him speaking in Italian in praise of missionary zeal in a rather crackly radio message of that same year.
La figura del missionario cattolico irradia dei fulgidi splendori dell'eroismo.
You may be wondering how Dublin dealt with the arrival of these pilgrims. It seems from records of the time that it proved to be a welcoming city, for while many found lodgings in the liners acting as floating hotels, others were invited into the homes of Dubliners. There had even been mattress handouts on the part of the authorities. So extraordinary was the event that the government had passed a special act for the occasion. And on a more flashy note, local authorities had arranged for all the major buildings to be lit up at night by a series of powerful spotlights and coloured lamps. The highlight of this momentous occasion came on the final day of the Congress, as an estimated 1 million faithful gathered for an open-air Holy Mass in the 15-acre Phoenix Park. And the Pope, from Rome, lent his voice to the occasion, from the Vatican's Apostolic Library, through the microphones of Vatican Radio, for all to hear right across Dublin, through loudspeakers set up across the city. All could hear the announcer pronouncing these words in Latin, Attendite Beatissimus Pater, statim loquetur vobis. And all knelt as they understood the Holy Father's words were about to reach them. They expressed hope. We pray, he said, that God may grant you the gifts of unity and peace. Imparting his apostolic blessing over, he said, our beloved Ireland, and rest there forever. The atmosphere was described as quiet and prayerful. Many among the faithful donned badges, the smartest of which were manufactured in die-stamped brass with gilt coating and blue enamel, the text reading Internat Dublinensis Congresso Eucharistic. No doubt many Irish still treasure these in their homes today. Among the many visitors present on this occasion was English Catholic writer G.K. Chesterton, who wrote at the time.
I confess I was myself enough of an outsider to feel flash through my mind as the illimitable multitude began to melt away towards the gates and roads and bridges, the instantaneous thought, this is democracy, and everyone is saying there is no such thing.
Little did Chesterton know that many years later, the first and only pope ever to visit Ireland, the now blessed John Paul II, would stand tall in this very same park and preside over Holy Mass in this very same spot, stressing that spiritual union between generations in Ireland, who have, he said, done God's will through the ages up to the present day.
We are one in faith and spirit with the vast throng which filled this Phoenix Park on the occasion of the last great Eucharistic hosting held on this spot at the Eucharistic Congress in 1932.
And to get the feel of a time once again, let's listen to some more from the archive recording we heard a moment ago.
Over 20,000 priests take part in this moving pageant of the Sacred Host, and the pilgrims, in a column 15 miles long, 8 abreast, have marched down from Phoenix Park, converging around the high altar on O'Connell Bridge.
And now, looking ahead to the forthcoming 2012 June Eucharistic Congress, I'd like to quote once again from the Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin's basic text of the Dublin Eucharistic Congress. The passage therein, where he points as to how it too takes place at another crucial moment in the history of Ireland and of the Irish Church. Quote, "The Irish Church is in many ways a wounded church, and a church which seeks a new direction. Like many European countries, Ireland has undergone rapid social change in these years. Ireland has become a highly secularized society." Unquote. And again, further on in this text, touching on the recent scandal of sexual abuse of children by priests and religious in Ireland, Archbishop Martin says, quote, "This scandal has damaged the faith of many who feel robbed of their faith and feel betrayed by their church. This is so also of many of those who were abused and feel that a spiritual renewal should be an essential part of the healing process." Unquote. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.